Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. On today's program, we'll talk with famed oceanographer Sylvia Earle. She'll tell us why we in the Midwest should be concerned with what's happening to the world's oceans. That after we go behind the headlines and discuss the concern many Kirkwood High School students are feeling after one of their classmates appeared apparently in blackface, something he denies, by the way. Blackface has been offensive to people of color for almost two centuries. The reasons have not changed much over time. Here to explain is retired St. Louis educator, historian, and author, Dr. John Wright. John, when you look at this Kirkwood situation and this blackface incident, as an educator, how did that strike you?
You know, blackface has a history in this country. It goes back to the early 1900s. And what has happened, it was used first in entertainment, then it became where it pictured African Americans a certain light. And I think those of my age and those up until the Civil Rights Movement, it built a stereotype about the African American. And what happens, many whites who have carefully watched this over the years and entertainers built in that gradually, even I would say some advertisement on products, built a certain image of African Americans. And so when you see parents and community leaders seeing this, it generates thoughts of historical past.
And the past being the stereotypes that
stereotypes.
You're talking about?
Yeah. Generally when, you know, it started out with blackface, first with cork, then it's shoe polish, then makeup, then a wig with all the hair, big lips, white paint around the lips, red on them, then it's certain dialect, and then it kept going, and then you have people doing certain dances and fun, loving stuff to entertain the audience.
Not flattering stuff.
No, in no way.
All. Yeah.
And I think it went over even to the blaxploitation films where African Americans were still portrayed and a certain image to make money.
You know, you say it went back to the early part of the last century. I think it actually went back farther than that, to the early part of the 19th century.
Well, when I say the 1900s, yeah. You had some, I understand, in 1700s, late 1700s, slaves were taken to Portugal. They didn't do the blackface. They just had slaves taken to entertain the low royalty there. Mm. And so it kind of spilled over into the 1900s.
Yeah, my understanding was that in the 1800s, that it was used because blacks weren't allowed to be on the stage to entertain.
Right. When I said that, Don, I should have said it started in the 1800s.
Yeah, okay.
With Dan Rice, with the minstrels. It picked up with him in the Jim Crow thing. When I said 19, it should have been 18.
You meant 19th century.
Yeah, I had to correct that. Around 1823, it started picking up into the minstrel shows in a heavy format.
At some point, though, it is my understanding that even black entertainers were using blackface.
That was the only way they were allowed to be on stage. You know, you could entertain us, but you've got to do this black entertainment type thing like whites did. You've got to mimic us to keep the stereotypes going.
You've got to mimic us mimicking you.
Whites who have portrayed blacks in a derogatory manner.
You know, it's just incredible to think of the history in that way. It was actually fairly complicated, wasn't it?
It was, and it wasn't, because it portrayed an image that America at that time wanted to portray African Americans. And it passed it down, and it did a great deal of harm to individuals. You can't imagine, as a youngster growing up, those who were dark-complexed had a terrible time in schools. And it happened in many countries where Europeans settle. You know, this just wasn't an American issue. When I was in India, the people who were in charge were light complexion. The ads in the paper were for light-complexed women. And so when we started here, all the jobs before integration, they started with light-complected employees.
And dark complexion came in when the riots came because business wouldn't know. We got one. See him over there? It was safe at that point. I'm going to be excused because I got some. You can see them from a distance. Early, you wanted to hide, the system wanted to hide them. We've got some, but they were light complexion, and they kind of blended in. And so we are gradually working our way through that, but it's still ingrained in the system.
You mentioned advertisements a little while ago, and the two most prominent that come to my mind are Aunt Jemima and Uncle Ben.
You got it.
They weren't light complected.
But they represent a certain style. Aunt Jemima, the mild woman in the kitchen.
The mammy.
And the mammy. Uncle Ben was a gentle guy, cooperative. But if you notice, the caricatures of those have changed and modernized over time. Aunt Jemima looks quite different from what she did when she first came out. Then Uncle Ben kind of looks a little more classier than he did when he first came out.
I'm not sure I really make the connection between Aunt Jemima and blackface minstrels.
Well, it's a certain type of black woman. Aunt Jemima represented a certain type of black woman we wanted.
As acceptable?
Acceptable. Uncle Ben was an acceptable type of guy. Same way with the guy with cream of wheat.
Oh, yeah, sure, I've forgotten.
He was an acceptable type of African-American. Wasn't aggressive, wasn't sassy, but a gentle type of person.
Servile.
Right.
Servile. They're all there to serve somebody, presumably.
Correct.
Presumably white people.
Right.
White people. I wonder if the kids today, Kirkwood High School students, people of that age group, get any of this. I mean, a kid puts on blackface thinking he's funny. I wonder if anybody really gets it.
They didn't live through it.
Yeah.
They didn't live through it. When you live through that, and as a youngster growing up, if you were dark-complected, you know, there used to be a saying, if you're white, you're all right. If you're brown, stick around. If you're black, stay back. And then making fun of dark-complected individuals because of their color, not being able to get a job because of your color, being stopped because of your color. While you're walking, while you're shopping, if you're light-complected, you could go into a store. No one bothered you. If you're dark-complected, you got trailed in the store. So many of our youngsters haven't had a heavy experience of that, of being barred from places because of color.
And yet at Kirkwood, they were deeply, deeply offended. I wonder how this is passed down generation to generation.
Parents talk about it around the dinner table in some families.
Yeah.
They relate certain situations. Now, Kirkwood, you have to remember, had an explosion, several explosions. You have the Meacham Park situation. Where Meacham Park was kind of ostracized from the community. Then it became a valuable commodity that you could take part of it and build Sam's, Lowe's. You gradually take half the community away, and then you put some decent housing supposedly there and the rest of it, but you take a large portion of it away. And so it's acceptable to bring that what's left into the community.
Do you think the kids in the African-American kids in Kirkwood might be more sensitive to this sort of thing than other places?
I think because of Cookie Thornton.
Cookie Thornton, sure.
And the other young man who shot the police officer who said he stepped over his brother who was dying for cause of asthma. So those things are conversations that stay on the mouth of many of the youngsters locally.
I should just remind our audience, the Cookie Thornton case was where this young man went to the city council meeting and with a gun and started shooting and killed people, including ultimately the mayor.
Those are frequent. I mean, that's in the lifetime of many of those youngsters of a certain age.
Yeah. A couple of things pop into my mind, John, with regard to this whole blackface thing. One of the most famous entertainers of all time, well into the 20th century, was Al Jolson. And Al Jolson always performed in blackface. And yet he was extraordinarily popular, as far as I know, popular among both races.
Well, this mammy thing, you go back to Aunt Jemima, and with the black face, the white and the red lips and Mammy and all this stuff, Amos and Andy and all these things. But when the civil rights movement came out, I'm Black and I'm Proud, it all this began to change. People began to see themselves in a different light. That was the movement to get away from the Aunt Jemima, to get away from the Uncle Ben, to get away from all the things that portrayed a negative image of African Americans, to begin to see blacks in a positive light. And those type of caricatures didn't. Amos and Andy died. The Little Rascals with Buckwheat died. And so we had a number of things that just kind of withered at that point.
I'm glad you brought up Amos and Andy, because I wanted to talk about that for a moment or two. Amos and Andy on the radio, the two men who play those characters were white. And, of course, it was on the radio, so there's no blackface involved there. But they were posing as black men. That program ran for more than 20 years on the radio. It used to be on every night, and then it was on weekly, and it was the most popular radio program in the country, which meant that an awful lot of whites enjoyed listening to that. Ultimately, it became a television program. And very, very quickly, it was discounted. Why would you say that was? I mean, after being so popular on radio for so many years, from the 30s into the 50s, why did the television program fail, do you think?
I think people were getting to see whites portraying blacks in a stereotypic manner. And that was not acceptable. You know, in our community, we can tell jokes about black folks, but you as a white can't tell jokes about black folks, especially at our dinner table. Now, I can do it at my dinner table, but you can't do it as a white at my dinner table. And I think in most communities, I've heard Polish individuals talk about Polish jokes, but I, as a black individual, can't tell Polish jokes. I've heard my Jewish friends have told friends about the Jewish community, but I would never attempt to do that. But I think the same thing happened with the Amos and Andy caricatures of blacks, the dialect, and trying to pretend they're African-American, it just wasn't acceptable, just like with any other ethnic group. You can't do that and expect to be.
Of course, accepted. On the television program, the actors were African-American.
But it's still portrayed, it was a carryover. Mm-hmm. But you have to remember now, we're getting into the 60s.
Close to it. This was
the 50s. We're getting into it now. Yeah. It was heating up it started heating up in the 40s, and then it started boiling in the 60s.
Yeah.
When James Baldwin and everyone was writing, "It's coming," you know, people didn't see the handwriting on the wall.
The television Amos and Andy program, I think, died at about the time Brown versus Board of Education was passed by the U.S. Supreme Court.
Yeah. You know, Clark did the Dow situation, the white Dow, the black Dow, and all those things began to come to a head. People began to look at what was shaping the image of African Americans. And so we began to have a racial consciousness among a larger majority. There was always a group with a racial consciousness, but then it began to spread at a rapid rate. And
one of the things that kind of endured beyond all of the other things we're talking about was the famous Mummers Parade in Philadelphia. You remember that? It was all done in blackface. And it went on for years and years and years, starting in the 1800s, and it was finally drummed out of existence in terms of the blackface part of it in the 70s. So it lasted right through. I wonder why. It was only in Philadelphia.
Well, sometimes it only takes a spark, and then people begin to see things. There's one community, I won't go because they're having enough problems right now. They wanted to name a school. They wanted to name the school after a slave owner. It was on land where the home was, and when the home was torn down, chains were found in the basement where slaves were chained. There's a park next to the school which still bears the name of the slave owner. Rather than they agreed not to name the school for the slave owner, but they kept part of the name of the park onto the new name of the school. And no one right now realizes a park was named for a slave owner. Mm. No, the school was about ready to be named. But I would say we're in 2016. Yeah. And the park is still there. It's a majority African-American. That section of town is majority African-American. I would say once a spark is lit with all the problems in the community, that will go.
I think one of the sparks is the Black Lives Matter movement. And what you're talking about now in the last couple of years, they have pointed to some very, very famous educational institutions, colleges and universities, that have the kind of background that you're talking about. And they want, even talking about Thomas Jefferson, given the fact that he had slaves, you know, and given the role that he played in history, that maybe, you know, we shouldn't be as devoutly partial to him as we have been.
Well, some things we haven't paid attention to. Yeah. This thing with the national anthem, the third stanza of the anthem that celebrates the killing of slaves. You know, we haven't paid any attention to that. Yeah. And I wouldn't be surprised at some point there may be a question, should we be singing this national anthem or acknowledge the third stanza should be abolished altogether? But it's there. And all the controversy has brought attention to a part that we've ignored for years.
As an educator, what is your take on our teaching of Black history in our schools today?
I think we need to teach American history. American history is the history of everyone, without the exclusion of African-American contributions. What happens, I think, many whites grow up thinking that blacks have played no part in the development of this country. And it's their country, and so therefore blacks have no right in a celebration of the history of the country. But when we look at history as a whole, we learn that everyone who's here has played a role in the Chinese helped build the railroad out west. But we don't talk about that. I've read a long time there were Jewish cowboys, you know. You know, there were African-Americans who were cowboys, the West. And those things, based on Hollywood, didn't exist. We've been carefully taught to hate. We've been carefully taught certain images. We have to be carefully taught to learn about everyone's contribution.
You're taking the lyrics from Rodgers and Hammerstein from South Pacific in 1948, I think it was. You've got to be carefully taught to hate. And perhaps if we had education such as you're describing here, some kid, some misguided kid in a school like Kirkwood wouldn't come out of the men's room in blackface trying to be funny. That would be an improvement.
That would.
That would be an improvement. Author, educator, and historian John Wright. Thank you so much, John, for being with us. Always a pleasure talking to you.
Same here, Don.
We'll be back soon with oceanographer Dr. Sylvia Earle telling us why oceans are important to us here in the Midwest. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.